Welcome into the fourth and final hour, Robbie and Rexroad Thursday edition. Joe Rexroad here with Mark Howard, Ryan Porth producing, Robbie Stanley glamping in the Grand Canyon, apparently. And we are very excited to welcome in our next guest, Luke DeCock, News and Observer columnist, a guy who is very familiar with the Carolina Hurricanes. Luke, thanks for joining us. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, no, my pleasure. I figure we'll be talking a lot in the next week or two, or, you know, if there ever is a schedule in this playoff series ever gets played.
Well, that was my first question, so you don't have an answer for us.
Everything I hear, and I think everything everyone else hears, is that this is likely to start Monday, but I don't know that that's official yet. And, you know, it's the NHL, and nothing happens logically, so things could still change. But, I'm expecting it to start Monday. I think that makes the most sense from a TV perspective. I joked last night that the delay is NBC still trying to find a way to get, you know, Chicago and Philadelphia and its national struggling to come up with a schedule without them, maybe the Red Wings too. So, yeah, no, I'm expecting Monday, but I also have learned not to take anything for granted.
So when it does start, Luke, what is the, like, capacity, you know, attendance situation there? What's it going to be? Is it changing at all? Has it changed recently?
You know, it changed sort of at the beginning of April when the state relaxed some sort of capacity requirements. It allowed the Hurricanes to go from about 2,500 to a little under 5,000. And the regulation in North Carolina right now is indoor arenas are allowed to be open at 50% of capacity, which for the Hurricanes would be about 9,500. But because of sort of other regulations, in this case, kind of some of the social distancing mandates in those same regulations, you know, the spirit of the law is 50%. The letter of the law actually has kept them around 4,500. They're going to be able to get that up to 6,000 for the playoffs by using some suites differently and moving some people around and selling bigger pods of tickets in the stands. But it still is going to be, you know, half as many as Nashville is expecting to have. And, you know, does that matter? I don't know. In a playoff series, it feels like every little thing matters. Certainly Rod Brindamore, you know, was asked about it yesterday and wasn't happy, you know, thinks it does matter. I'm a little more sanguine about it. I mean, I think, you know, the difference between 6 and 12 probably will be noticeable, but it's still a home crowd and home ice, and I think that probably matters more in the end. But, you know, North Carolina's kind of been in a lot of ways at the forefront of what has been done during coronavirus to try to deal with some of this stuff. The governor and the Health and Human Services Secretary have gotten a lot of praise for what they've done. So, you know, I'm not going to start second-guessing them now, but I think it would be nice if they found a way to get the Hurricanes to 50%, which is, you know, the spirit of the regulations.
We're speaking to Luke DeCock, the columnist for the News and Observer. And, Luke, do you have a different perception of this series maybe than you would have 3 or 4 weeks ago, that the Predators at least now seemingly have a puncher's chance?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I think, you know, in any playoff series, that's always the case, because a goalie can get hot or a power play can get hot, and boom, there you go. You know, I still think I don't put a ton of stock from the Hurricanes' perspective into the two games in Nashville, because, you know, that was a team that had done a good job for a little while after it clinched a playoff spot of keeping its foot on the gas, but was clearly starting to waver naturally. You know, that's human nature. And certainly the last game, that was a half of an AHL roster that was out there. You know, I think it was probably a good experience for the Predators just to have, you know, the physical experience of winning a game. I mean, I don't think you want to go into any series 0-8 against the team you're playing. But, you know, I look back 2 years ago, the Hurricanes had no success against the Capitals in the regular season and beat them in 7 games. And last year they were 0-4 against the Rangers and swept them in the preliminary round. So sometimes these things matter. I mean, 8 games is a bigger sample, obviously. Sometimes they don't. But I think it was probably more important for the Predators just to kind of see it and be able to visualize what a win would look like. Obviously, you know, the sort of Pekka Rinne night was a lift for the team. But I would also expect to see a more focused, more energized, and more committed Hurricanes team, quite frankly, when the series starts. They've had plenty of time to regroup and get back in gear. And, you know, I think that probably mentally it'll be a different team than what we saw in Nashville over the weekend.
What's interesting to you about Rod Brind'Amour, a guy who might be stronger and in better shape than most of the guys on his roster?
I mean, let's not kid ourselves. He's probably still the second best center in the division. you know, I mean, he's a piece of work, and I mean that in a good way. I mean, he's as driven a human being as there is in sports. I mean, he's just very committed to who he is and what he does. And that showed as a player. It shows as a coach for sure. The story I always tell is, you know, when Rod Brind'Amour was an assistant captain on this team and Ron Francis was the captain, you know, you're talking about Ron Francis, very strong personality, Hall of Famer. And when they promoted Brind'Amour, you know, I was concerned that he was kind of too quiet and too much of a leader by example. And I was so wrong about that, because what's really impressive about Rod Brind'Amour, beyond the workouts and the fact that he has muscles in his feet that most people don't even know exist, is that he understands leadership so well, just as a concept, the sort of, you know, the very almost academic concept of what it means to lead and how to lead, that he deferred to Ron Francis, and he, you know, tried to be a good lieutenant. And when he was empowered and enabled to run the room the way he wanted to do it, you know, they turned around and won the Stanley Cup. And he really should have won the Conn Smythe trophy that year. I voted for him. His leadership, both in the Montreal series, and we don't need to relive too much ancient history, but they were down 2-0 after losing the first two games at home to Montreal in the first round. You know, he spoke then and rallied the team. He spoke after they got blown out in Game 6 at Edmonton with a chance to win the Cup and had to come back and win in Game 7 at home. He just had an unbelievable feel as a captain for what the team needed, what each individual player needed. And he 100% transitioned into that as a coach. Just an unbelievable motivator, leader, same situation. He was an assistant coach under Bill Peters, who no one liked, and there were questions about whether this was enough of a new sort of regime. And again, when he was empowered, when he was, you know, given the leeway to do things his own way, you know, he broke a 10-year playoff drought as a rookie coach with essentially the same team as the year before, plus Andrei Svechnikov. Now, that's a big plus. And he had Justin Williams, who had been bewilderingly passed over for the captaincy the year before, as a captain, a guy who was a line mate of his, and the two of them basically share a brain. So he had some advantages stepping into that role. But you've seen it the last 3 years. The Hurricanes have never made the playoffs 3 years in a row in their history. But they've done it under Rod Brind'Amour. And he did it with a team that, you know, isn't substantially rebuilt from what he took over. So, you know, I've covered him his entire career in Carolina minus a couple months. And, you know, I just have a ton of respect for him as a leader and as a person, and have come to have it as a coach. He's just a very impressive human being.
Talking to Luke Dukak, News and Observer columnist, guy who knows the Carolina Hurricanes as well as anyone. And Luke, like you said, I mean, he's been very successful, Rod Brind'Amour, right away. You know, conference finals first year. You know, last year there's a surprise win over the Rangers. It ends there at the hands of the Bruins. But now this is a team on the short list to me of teams that are real contenders to win a cup. First of all, what's the difference? What has changed? This team has, to me, again, I've watched mostly the games against Nashville, and at times they've just looked overwhelming. But also, is there any sort of psychological, I guess, concern about being a favorite now? How do you think these guys can handle that?
You know, it's a really good question, because that is a transition that they've sort of made as a franchise from 2019 to 2020 to 2021. I don't think that will phase this team. They dealt with expectations this year really well, obviously winning the division despite the defending Stanley Cup champions, despite Florida having an amazing year, despite, you know, Dallas, the defending finalists, you know, Nashville, a team that put together a really good season, obviously. There wasn't any of that. And if you go back to last year, you know, the preliminary series against the Rangers when they were heavily favored despite not beating the Rangers in the regular season, and they absolutely stepped on the Rangers throughout from the beginning and gave them absolutely no oxygen. So this is a team that does know how to perform as a favorite. It'll be different in a 7-game series. You know, the issue that they have, I shouldn't say issue, question that they have, you know, their style of play. They know the special teams. They know they've got to figure out the goaltending situation. It's not necessarily a weakness. It's just they have options. There isn't a clear number one option. And so there's going to be a little uncertainty there until things work themselves out. But I think it's a team that is capable of playing sort of from above, is comfortable as a favorite, is comfortable, you know, dealing with expectations. Where the Hurricanes have struggled in the playoffs, and it's been the Bruins both times, is when things get really physical, can they match sort of the nastiness and physical edge that a team like the Bruins can bring, and the Rangers couldn't, and the Islanders couldn't 2 years ago, and the Capitals could, and they, you know, they dealt with it, and it went down to seven games. So, you know, that's a question when you look at the last two games in Nashville. The Predators obviously, you know, trying to send some kind of a message, and certainly did on the scoreboard. You know, if this series gets bogged down like that, you know, and players start getting hurt and whatnot, how will the Hurricanes respond to that? I think that and the goaltending are the two biggest questions. But in terms of the way they want to play, what they do, they know what they do well. They have a lot of confidence that way. They have a couple different lines that can score. They've got a great checking line, you know, and they've got really a top four on defense that's as good as anybody in the league. So they don't really worry about matchup issues. So, you know, a lot of the things that you normally talk about going into a playoff series just, you know, aren't really concerns for them.
Luke, what about owner Thomas Dundon, who came in, you know, cleaning out the radio pairing, Chuck Caton, who had been there forever, going back to their Whalers days, and looking like a guy that wanted to do it on the cheap, but that hasn't necessarily been the case, has it?
No, and you know, I think the key to understanding Tom Dundon, who is a different breed of cat, is he'll spend money where he thinks it will help them win. I mean, they went from being one of the lowest payroll teams in the league under Peter Karmanos, the old owner who moved the team here, to being a cap team. You know, they've traded cap space for first-round picks, which is the case in the Patrick Marleau deal. So, you know, that's a couple million dollars there that you spend to basically buy a first-round pick. So they've spent money on the team. But, you know, the broadcast booth. It's not just Chuck Caton, the radio guy, who obviously is, you know, is the longtime president of the Broadcasters Association and the Hall of Fame, the whole deal. You know, it was last year it was John Forslund, the television guy, future Hall of Famer, you know, a guy who does, you know, really the number two guy for NBC, probably would have done the you know, had a chance to do the finals with DocCon. So, you know, this is a decisions that were not necessarily popular with the fans. And in some cases, hard to understand, in some cases not. But when you look at the team on the ice in terms of re-signing players, in terms of, you know, the draft and things like that, they've spent to the cap. And the big issue they have now, they've got, you know, a Svechnikov contract. They've got Dougie Hamilton's an unrestricted free agent. And Rod Brindamore's and his whole staff are unrestricted free agents. You know, the Svechnikov and Brindamore will get done. There's some negotiating there. But this is a case where Dundon had the cheapest coach in the NHL, or one of the two or three cheapest coaches in the NHL, and he's going to have to pay him up to the median because there's four or five teams that would jump on the chance to hire Rod Brindamore. So he's going to get, you know, $1.8, $2 million, and Dundon's going to have to bite the bullet on that because that is something that contributes to this team winning.
Luke DeCock, News and Observer columnist, has been our guest. Luke, thank you so much. Great stuff. Looking forward to the series, and you know, DM me when you get the time and day today, will you?
Yeah, I'll let you know if we ever do. Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Luke DeCock, News and Observer columnist. Great stuff on the Canes. And we come back, we're going to talk about other four seeds, along with the Preds, who have chances to pull upsets in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Where do the Preds rank in that regard? Coming up next, Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Showed. Listen to The Game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's The Game's 1K payday presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Robbie and Rex Showed, Joe Rex Showed, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth, talking about the NHL playoffs, talking about the Preds. Luke DeCock was very good. Of course, I mean, he covered that as a beat for a long time, so he knows that franchise inside and out. And, you know, if anyone was thinking that, you know, maybe the Hurricanes are wobbly or that the Preds sent some big message, I think it was good for the Preds, Mark, to have the success they had. Obviously, it was good to have success to get into the playoffs. You do need to do that first before you can beat a team in the playoffs. But I think that the Canes are going to be a very motivated, fresh, dangerous-looking team right from the jump, game one, we think, Monday.
I got to believe Rod Brindamore is kind of happy they lost those last two games in Nashville. And, yes, he had partially an AHL roster out there. But, you know, it's something he can hold over the heads of his players and, you know, give them a little bit of motivation. I think if you're realistic, if you're a Preds fan, there's a certain element of fool's gold into what unfolded, you know, Saturday and Monday at Bridgestone Arena. It was great. It was fun. It was nice to see. We laughed. We cried. It became a part of us. But let's be honest here. I don't think that's going to really play a whole lot into the series.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably, honestly, like, good for both teams, to your point, you know? Maybe, you know, does it help the Preds more because they just had to get a win at least to see it happen?
Yeah, yeah, man.
You could make that case. But I agree with you. I think Brindamore is he's going to relish this, and I'm sure some of those practices are going to be interesting. But the goaltender thing that Luke brought up, I mean, it is interesting because Mrazek is a guy I just assumed it'd be him just because he's been so good against the Preds, you know? But if you have a night like that, it's a game, a meaningless game. It's a, you know, you got Tyler Lewington out there for the Preds. You know, you got a bunch of guys you don't know out there for you. Does it matter if you just had one bad night and let in a couple softies? Like should that impact Brindamore's decision?
A lot of coaches feel like that motivates you. I mean, I don't know Mrazek's mental makeup, but I guess we'll find out if he's out there in game one.
So the Preds, a four seed, obviously hoping to spring an upset, and it would be a big, big upset. As you look around the rest of the – I mean, you look at these matchups, it's just – I love this. I love this tournament. This tournament's so awesome. And, I mean, early, if you have these matchups, you know, like Toronto-Montreal, I mean, it's just – come on.
Canadians have no chance.
I don't think so either.
They have negative 15 chance of winning that series.
I don't think so either, but it's still – I still want to watch it, right?
Oh, I know.
Like, I still want to watch that series. You know, is it – it looks like – so it is Vegas, the one? Vegas is – they're not the one for sure.
I think if Colorado wins tonight in regulation, they get the one because they wrap up their regular season tonight against L.A. Of course, Calgary and Vancouver are in their season in July, so.
Seriously. Well.
It's just crazy.
Yeah, for no apparent reason.
They're going to be playing 1 o'clock games next week on weekdays because of playoff games at night. It's crazy.
Moronic.
Yeah.
But, the Blues have never become the team that we saw win the Cup. And it just goes to show you how every year is different and just how quickly, you know, one team – can fall off the perch, you know, because, you know, that was a team that looked like it was ready-made to win multiple cups a couple of years ago. Obviously, it didn't happen last year. And this year, they're going to be a huge underdog, likely to Colorado, a team that the Preds used to own. Pecorino just had to throw his, throw his blocker out there, and it was an automatic win. That's the best number four, obviously, and I'm not, you know, making some great revelation here, are the Islanders.
Oh, yeah.
The Islanders have a real chance of winning that first round series against Pittsburgh. They're really good down the middle, you know, with Barzal, Bailey, and Brock Nelson. And Trotsky has become a good playoff coach. And, you know, that division was so close most of the year. The Islanders were easily the best, in my opinion, the best number four seed.
I mean, 2 months ago, the Islanders were atop that division with some sort of comfort level. But then once Anders Lee went down, They've kind of slowly gone down from one seed to two to three, now to four.
But that's not great. I mean, the Penguins, that's not a – they can't relish this matchup.
I mean, right? I think Pittsburgh won 6 of 8 against the Islanders this year. But the biggest question with Pittsburgh is their goaltending. I mean, Tristan Jarry doesn't have a ton of playoff experience, whereas Semyon Varlamov has been pretty darn good most of the year.
But Jeff Carter could be a huge X factor. You know, Carter had a couple of insane games for the Penguins. He's won 2 cups with the LA Kings. This is why they brought him there. You know, we talk about why the Preds went out and got Duchesne. This is why the Penguins went out and got a winning player, which is really amazing because he was Spuds McKenzie when he was with the Flyers. He was a party animal to the nth degree.
No chance you know that reference.
Ryan no.
Porth. I loved it, though.
You didn't know who Spuds McKenzie is?
No.
Wow. I got to play to a younger audience.
He was popular, actually, around the time Cocoon came out.
That's true. I'm sorry.
I'm a big fan of both those references.
Anyway. Well, Jeff Carter
was your point.
Wasn't Jeff Carter a part of that Dry Island in Philly?
Yeah, with Hartnell and all those
guys. Was it Mike Richards on that, too?
Mike Richards was, too. Mike Richards just couldn't keep a handle on it. And his career, you know, fizzled prematurely.
Yeah.
But Carter, to his credit, cleaned his act up. The guy had just immense talent. He was with Columbus, remember, for about 5 minutes. And then they turned him around and sent him to L.A. But, wow, that's a guy who could score 4 or 5 a game.
So, I mean, yeah, the Islanders, the clear of the fours, you know, the clear best chance, right?
Yeah.
Of the three, you know, the Preds against the Canes, the Canadiens against the Leafs, or the Blues against either Colorado or Vegas. That's big incentive, by the way, to me, to play the Blues rather than play the Wild. Right?
Well,
I mean,
kind of like
in this division with Florida, Tampa Bay, Carolina. But of those three fours, how would you rank them in terms of percentage chance to pull the upset?
Well, you can't ignore the Blues because they have so much talent on their roster. They've underachieved for most of the year. Jordan Binnington has played fairly well the last couple of weeks, but he has not had a good year.
No.
But, again, you know, we know the playoffs. You get hot in the playoffs, and all of a sudden, everything's different.
Binnington strikes me as Cam Ward 2.0.
Well, that was worth one Stanley Cup.
It was, and he got his one. I don't know if he'll get another. I would say the Preds are easily number two on that list. If we're putting Islanders number one, the Preds are easily number two. I don't give the Blues any shot against Vegas or Colorado. And then Montreal is the only way I could see that happening is if Carey Price somehow finds his old self that he hasn't been in the last year or two.
Toronto has so much talent.
I know they do, but they also pee on their pants every year in the playoffs.
Oh, they poo the bed. They definitely do.
I mean, maybe at some point they'll be Washington, right? Like they'll have that year, finally, after year of us talking about that, but they still have to do it to believe it.
And talk about pressure. There is immense pressure on that Leafs team to at least make it to the Final Four, if not win the Cup.
I mean, that means they're good.
Yeah, but
I remember they were here a few years, the last time they were here, watching Austin Matthews on the ice and going, good God, he is unbelievable.
Ridiculous.
I mean, you know, we all think Forsberg's pretty good. But Austin Matthews, different level.
He scored 41 this year.
Just unbelievable. And the same thing with Connor McDavid.
Don't you think? I mean, and I agree. Austin Matthews it's different when you watch him, but to me, that's even different more, right? When you go from him to McDavid,
McDavid's a space alien. McDavid's also a playmaker, but Austin Matthews, his hands are unbelievable.
McDavid is Jesus. That's what he is.
Connor McJesus.
That's what Subban called him.
I saw someone on Twitter tweet out this morning that if you cut McDavid's point total in half, he's 15th in the league.
That's pretty good.
The fact that he reached 100 this year is amazing.
The dream scenario is a 7-game series between the Leafs and the Oilers with Matthews versus McDavid.
Yep.
That would be awesome.
Yep.
That would be fun. Speaking of fun, Hal Gill coming up next on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have him talking Preds-Canes here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back, Robbie and Rexrode. Joe Rexrode, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth, little Billy Squire rocking. And I guess is that the theme music for Hal Gill? We're excited to...
I don't know if we have true theme music for Hal Gill.
We should find out if Hal's good with some Billy Squire, but we're excited to have Hal, presented by Duncan, featuring their new location in Bellmead, TriStar Moving, TriStar Movers with five-star service. Hal, is Billy Squire cool, or I don't know, what do you...
Everybody wants him.
Yeah, little... Everybody know, some sticks. Wants
me. You know, if he kind of went with some... You know, Stroke Me would have been better, but I like the Mickey Avalon version. The Mickey Avalon version is a little bit more my style, but whatever. You know, it's good enough. Good enough. I'll take it.
That was a jam. Like, for me, that was a jam, like, in fourth grade on the bus. Stroke Me by Billy Squire, like, with people, you know, the Walkmans. Oh, man. Good times. Well, Hal, thanks for joining us.
Mark Howard had his IROC Z, and he was blasting that.
Absolutely.
Jean jacket. The hair was feathered. Oh, okay. Well, look, well, I got to bring this up because this just happened during the break. This is incredible, Hal. I think you'll love this. Did you know that Mark Howard went to high school with the dude who played Mike Damone in Fast Times Ridgemont High?
No way.
West Hartford, Connecticut, really, baby.
It's true. What's his name?
Wow. Bob Romanis.
Bob Romanis. And he actually, like, hung out with his leather jacket smoking cigarettes outside the school in real life.
We thought he was going to jail.
I mean, that's amazing.
He ended up being Natalie's boyfriend on Facts of Life, Snake.
Just unreal.
Porth?
Just unreal.
Any of this, Porth? Any of this registering with you, Porth?
No.
Nothing at all. All right. I mean, seriously, like, if there's going to – I mean, homework assignment for Porth, like, Fast Times has got to be, like, you got to – You know, you got to catch up on that one. All right. Anyway,
I don't know if Porth is old enough to handle that kind of movie.
Well, we can do the TV version.
You know, I'll add it to the list.
Yeah, perfect.
Where Sean Penn's like, "You nerd," instead of what he actually says. You know, that's, yeah. So, Hal, I got to ask you this, because we ask everybody we have on to talk Preds Canes. When's game one? What time?
Yeah, that's a good question. When it happens? Do we know yet?
I keep
hitting refresh.
Yeah, there's strong sentiment for Monday, so we're gonna go with Monday. We believe. Hal, what do you think we're gonna see right off the jump from these two teams? How do you think they'll both respond to, you know, these latest two encounters?
I think both teams are heavily built on the forecheck. So whoever can establish their forecheck first is going to get a big leg up either way. And that, I say that, and the Canes are great at beating a forecheck, but I think you saw on last Saturday night when the game did mean something to the Preds, they were able to get on them and get their forecheck going, but they were also able to break out, and they stretched the zone pretty well. So I think the Preds have to be a little bit more optimistic that they can beat that pressure, and then they can put their pressure on themselves. So I'm looking, you know, the next game, Monday night, I don't look at that as meaning too much, although, you know, the Preds certainly dominated. But it's, I think, really, you're looking at, can the Canes get their form back where they're saying, okay, we're going to control this game, beating the forecheck and establishing our own.
And, you know, another thing that happened Monday, I mean, obviously, you're right, you know, Saturday, much bigger deal. Preds had to win it to get in, full lineups for both teams. Matt Duchene did get a couple in on Monday, a guy who, obviously, you're talking about, you know, two of his six goals now on the year. Does that matter, Hal? Do you think that's something that can be carried forward, or you just erase that whole game?
It's funny. Everything matters. But it's a new season, and so you can say, oh, that was a big step forward. But you know, a lot of times in the playoffs, it's a different beast. And you know, I can, okay, Duchene has his confidence. Maybe Johansson gets a little more confidence, and that's all. But in the end, you jump out in a playoff game and you get punched in the face right when you know. I mean. The first game of the first series of the playoffs is the most physical by far. Everyone's jacked up, and they've been waiting for this for the whole season, and they're going to go out, and it's going to be mayhem. And so to be able to perform in that atmosphere is the real challenge, and that's why I say confidence is great, but you got to do it when it matters.
We're speaking to Hal Gill, of course, Preds radio and TV analyst. Assuming everybody's healthy, do you keep Duchesne on the first line, or do you put RV there and balance him out?
Well, that's assuming everyone's healthy, then it's a whole different setup, and I think there's different levels of healthy, and that's the hard part. Is this guy healthy enough to be a beast for our team, or is he, you know, healthy enough to go out and chip in? And do you say, okay, we have an upside with this guy, whereas maybe we don't have the upside, and maybe you're looking for that game breaker. Duchesne could be that game breaker, and I will say, maybe 2 or 3 months ago, I was going to say if the Preds were going to do anything, it was going to have to be because Johansson and Duchesne got their games together at the right time. But now, with this team identity and the way it's gone, I feel like they could ride that fourth line mentality and have success with it because it's worked. So I put that in John Hines' court because I don't want to have to answer those questions, and he's going to have to answer those questions, and it's going to be a tough decision. I know he struggles with it. You know, you have these elite players that you need to win games, but you also have these guys that are doing everything you're asking them to do and getting, you know, they're doing it. They're getting the rewards of all their efforts. So it's a tough decision, and, you know, I'm anxious to see how this plays out.
Explain what's impressed you about the job that Rob Scuderi has done with the Preds defenseman.
Well, you look through the whole coaching staff, development included. Everyone, you know, you look at Carrier, you know, I don't know what clicked with him, but he was a different player when he got called up this year. And you look through up and down what the Preds have done. You look at Tanner Jeannot, Matthew Olivier, you know, you have young guys coming in. I think Harper and Benning are as solid as you can get on defense, and they've continued to improve themselves. But then you have these guys like Davies coming in. You know, Ference came in. He looked good. The talent that are pushing. Favreau is fighting off that injury and trying to get back up to game shape. So, you know, I think he needs a little time to catch up to speed. And you have Carrier saying, no, I'm right there. I'm up to speed. And how telling was that he sat out that last game and they said, hey, let's give this kid a break because he's going to have to play some playoff hockey. Now, all that being said, the coaches and development team have really worked hard to get these guys ready. Playoffs, as I was talking about, is a different beast. So are they playoff ready? And we're going to find out.
Yeah, talking to Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst. And last thing for you, Hal, you led me into what I was going to ask you, and that is about Favreau in particular. Like you said, he's been banged up. Carrier has just emerged. Like you said, it's very clear here. I mean, your top four. What do you think about Favreau at this point in this lineup, and how do you think that third pairing is going to look Monday or whenever game one is?
It's a tough one because Favreau has the offensive upside that you know, you look at Harper, Benning, Gudbranson, you know, those guys don't have that offensive upside. That being said, this is going to be a heavy physical series. I wouldn't be surprised if they said, hey, Dante, you know, you got to keep working and getting ready because we're going to have some big bodies and we need big bodies out there to play against them. But at the same time, it's always tempting for a coach to put a young defenseman that can move the puck and make plays. And you want them part of your lineup because, yeah, you got to make those plays in the playoffs. That's when it comes down to it, is every play matters. And if you can get just one big play, one seam pass that another player wouldn't make, that could make a difference in a game, you want that guy in the lineup. So, again, that's another tough decision, and I'm glad I don't have to make it. I think I get to sit there and watch it and talk about it. These guys have to make really tough decisions, and good on the Preds to to be in a position where these positions have to be determined. You know, like that's, I never thought we'd be saying, oh, Terrier has to be in the lineup. I never thought we'd say that. And I look at Jeannot and Olivier. You have to have those guys in the lineup. So whose spot do they take? Well, that's, it gives you tough decisions, but I'm sure, you know, David Poile, the management, the development staff and the coaches, are, they've got to be ecstatic that they have these tough decisions to make because they have some good players.
Yep, it's good to have options. Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst, presented by TriStar Moving and Duncan, has been our guest. Hal, thank you very much. And that's a sweet jacket, by the way. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, you got it. All right, guys, we'll talk to you.
Thanks, all right, Hal.
Hal Gill, Predators radio analyst, brought to you by TriStar Moving and Duncan. And actually, the way it's said is, where'd you get this jacket? But Porth doesn't get that reference. All right, when we come back, we will talk more Preds Canes as we wrap up the show. Robbie and Rex Road, ESPN 102.5, The Game, Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Welcome back, Robbie and Rex Road, Joe Rex Road, Mark Howard, Ryan Porth. Final segment. I'd like to let you know that ESPN 94.9 is the official English radio home of Nashville SC. Listen in Saturday as Nashville SC takes on Real Salt Lake out west. Pregame begins at 8:15. The match starts at 8:30. And here, Mark, on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, we've got some interesting remarks. First of all, some people who are mad at Ryan Porth. Kathleen, among those, saying, please don't call McDavid Jesus. Now, in Ryan Porth's defense, that's a nickname he's had for a long time, and it was McJesus.
McJesus.
Yeah.
Is the, you know, that's a long-term nickname. Got some response to our previous conversation on the whole frustration, fans, hot seat, reality, not reality. Nate texts in, could the fan angst toward Vrabel be from Vrabel not being truthful about Shane Bowen? I don't know about, was he not truthful? He was not forthcoming. But yes, I mean, I think with Robinson and Vrabel, decisions they made that didn't work out. So Bowen, certainly on Vrabel's side, Isaiah Wilson, and that whole draft last year and the whole offseason of acquisitions last year on Robinson's side, which again, like it's how you want to look at it, right? So all that went wrong for you and you went 11-5 and won the division.
Exactly.
So the big picture is you're successful. Here's what Ron texts in, okay? And I think Ron hits on something here. We're frustrated because the window is closing fast and Tannehill and Henry are getting older. They need to make moves fast if they want a Super Bowl. Yeah, you got to make moves. Well, they're making moves. You got to make moves that work. And that's where last year is frustrating because what if they'd done something different other than Isaiah Wilson? You know, what if they hadn't given all that money to Jadeveon Clowney? And, I mean, I can't sit here and Monday morning quarterback Clowney when I was like, they got to do it. Got to do it. But Vic Beasley, that one came with red flags.
If you told somebody they totally whiff on Vic Beasley, they pretty much whiff on Clowney. He was okay, but didn't make a huge impact. You only have 23 sacks. How many games do you think they won?
You have the worst third down defense in the history since the stat has been recorded. And frankly, I would think it's the worst ever because the NFL didn't used to have teams, right? I mean, you stopped
teams. Running
a
lot more on third down. I mean,
so, and all that, and you go 11-5. So something is going well, but no, I hear people. It's Tannehill, it's Henry, this is the window. Make the move. So, John Robinson paid Bud Dupree. I mean, who's the most important player on this team in terms of storyline or uncertainty in 2021?
Wow, good question.
I could make the case for Bud Dupree.
Bud Dupree, absolutely.
With all that money and with the necessary dramatic transformation in affecting quarterbacks.
And I know this is unfair to make the comparison, but we saw the difference Javon Kearse made when the Titans drafted him. Although it should be noted, they also drafted John Thornton, who had a great year on the interior on the D-line. And they had some big – Jason Fisk had a great year. Josh Evans, the late great, was unblockable by the time they got to the Super Bowl. So there were a lot of components there. But one player can make a huge difference.
Well, no doubt. And look, quarterback, most important position, always going to be the most important position. But I watched the 49ers get real close to winning it all with a pretty good quarterback and an unblockable defensive front. I watched Tampa Bay win it all last year with a still very good, impossibly good quarterback, okay? Tom Brady, outstanding. I thought he was done after I watched him lose to these guys at home. And he flipped that around, but I'd still put number one on the list. And this is going to get Jared so mad. It's that they could not be blocked. Aaron Rodgers could not stay upright. Patrick Mahomes could not stay upright.
Vita Vea and Ndamukong Suh made that D-line, that D-front go. When you have such great pressure coming from the inside, it discombobulates the best of quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, so that's – like, I don't know. The Titans secondary, I think, could be worse this year. Now, not worse than when Jonathan Joseph was playing. But, you know, from Butler, even like late season banged up Adoree Jackson and Desmond King, it could be worse. We don't know what Caleb Farley's going to be. We don't know what Elijah Molden's going to be. We don't know what Christian Fulton's going to be. Janoris Jenkins, fine. They could be worse, but the defense could be significantly better because – and I think Autry is the guy I feel more secure is going to make a difference. I think he and Simmons could be really good, and you could see where it comes together. But Bud Dupree's got to tie it all together, right? He's got to be the guy who
– Well, Jeffrey Simmons, I would also say, is a key player.
Yes.
He's got to – you know, this is his year to explode.
Yeah, so you know it's so to the question of the conversation on frustration, I think it's all fair. You know, it's fair to be frustrated. It's also important to keep in mind the success that has still happened. And I think when we talk about the Titans, you know, Derrick Henry and Tannehill, like they're afterthoughts now. It's like receiver, tight end. What do you do? But it's like they still do have those guys, which is a good thing to have. Well, Mark, it's been great having you in today. It's been fun. Hopefully, Robbie is enjoying his glamping. But you're coming back tomorrow.
I am.
So we're going to do this all over
again. Scheduled to appear.
There we go. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We're going to have a great show tomorrow.
At least we have that schedule.
Yeah.
We do know 6 a.m. tomorrow we will be on here. I hope we have a game time to talk about then. In the meantime, Darren Donick and Chase are up next here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.